You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 19th of January, 2021, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, the inauguration day is getting closer, and you do have to wonder at quite what is going on there. 15,000 troops? Is it 20,000 troops, supposedly, to prevent people getting at alleged president-elect Biden. And now we hear that he is investigating each and every one of those troops to make certain that they don't have loyalties to the established government, that they don't have loyalties to President Trump, who is still the leader of the established government at the moment. And we're being told that he was legitimately elected, a man who struggled to get 20 million followers on Twitter, and then you've got Donald Trump with 88 million followers on Twitter. And we're told that Biden got 80 million votes, and he's the legitimate president. If he's a legitimate president, why is he not expecting thousands, hundreds of thousands of people there to cheer him on? Why is he having to have all those military there? Quite clearly, there is something fishy going on there. Well, we're not going to get into that today. Anyway, I think what we'll do today is we will continue with the discussion that we were having yesterday about this competition that we are in with the other races and why it's not worth bothering ourselves with worrying about having a political party, because that's out of the realms of achievement, basically. What we need to be concentrating on at the moment, the most important and immediate battle of the moment that we face, is the battle to communicate our worldview to other whites. And the attempts at the moment that are being put in place to prevent us from being able to do that. All the while that we can explain to other whites who they are, their history, their inheritance, why it is important that they don't miscegenate, we won't become a minority. We will stay with the same numbers that we have now, and hopefully we will increase the numbers that we have now as more people realise the importance of doing so and the threats that we face if we do become a minority. If we can just prevent miscegenation from happening, then we know that there will always be a white race. There will always be white people here. And all the while that we have white people here, we have the possibility of regenerating our civilization or starting another civilization. All the while we actually have the quality here that we need, we're okay. We can put down roots somewhere else and grow the tree once again, as it were. Once that tree has become corrupted, it doesn't matter where it puts down its roots, it's not going to grow into the white race again, is it? So the most important thing is to keep our bloodlines from becoming contaminated. And we need to be able to explain this to people in terminology that they are going to understand. We need to be coming at it from the viewpoint of the children that are actually born to these mixed race couplings. The fact that they don't have any ancestors who look like them. They don't even have parents who look like them. They don't have a history of people that look like them. They will be ostracized pretty much from both communities for that. Even when people go out of their way to try to help them and be friendly to them, they will still know that they don't fit in because they don't look like anybody else. they don't have the same feelings as anybody else. There is a very high chance of depression with mixed race children. There's also a very high amount of suicide, because it's very difficult for them to talk about these things, because obviously they're going to love their parents. They don't want their parents to feel bad about what they have done. They're going to have skin problems, because mixed race people always have skin problems, because they have parts of one race and parts of another race, and each of the races has a different type of skin. I mean, black people, I don't think they have any oils in their skin. They have to, that's why they use the cocoa butter and various other external oils that they need to put on their skin. Whereas white people have oil glands close to the skin. So if your body is needing to have oil glands and you don't actually have any oil glands because part of it has got black skin, then you're going to have skin problems, which is, of course, going to cause upset in the person that this has happened to. There's all sorts of physical problems with this. If they need to have an organ transplant, it's going to be very difficult to find somebody with matching organs. Even the parents won't be able to provide a bone marrow transplant. I was listening to a podcast by Dr. Edward Dutton yesterday, and he was pointing out that if you have a coupling between, say, a white British man and a Bantu female, the white British man will have more in common with the Queen of England than he will actually have genetically in common with his own child. And Professor Dutton didn't actually talk about the Queen of England. He said just anybody else in Britain he will actually be closer to genetically than their own child. And as I spoke about yesterday, it means cutting off all those ancestors from having any more descendants. It means that those children are then part of another ethnic kinship group. They're actually part of the mixed race ethnic kinship group, which is minute at the moment. Normally, they end up being a part of the extended kinship group of the non-white race that they were a part of, simply because they are no longer white. But even amongst the non-white communities, they will find that they don't quite fit in. It really is an absolute tragedy what is being done to these children. And we need to point it out from that point of view. A child should have a right to ancestors. A child should have a right to a national inheritance. A child should have a right to look like their parents. They should have a right not to be genetically modified into a new being that doesn't actually have a kind of its own, which is essentially what is happening to these poor people that this occurs to. Now, we need to be able to talk about these subjects. We need to be able to communicate this. It's part of our human rights, is that we can communicate our ideas, we can communicate our worldview. We're supposed to be able to do that not just to the people around us, but between frontiers, between countries. We're supposed to be allowed to do this. Now, our opponents have brought in speech laws in an attempt to prevent us from being able to discuss subjects like this. And this is the battle that we're really facing now, because up until now, they have had to prove that there is an intent to incite hatred in what we are talking about, which means that you can talk about things in the way that I have just talked about things, and that cannot be construed as inciting hatred. There's no intent here to incite hatred. They want to change the law so that there is no need to actually prove there is any intent to incite hatred, which means that they would just be able to censor whole swathes of ideas that people have and things that people want to talk about. All they would have to do is just say, well, I think that incites hatred, and then you wouldn't be able to talk about it. And this is going on at the moment. This is going on in Scotland. This is going on with the Law Commission report into hate crimes that's going on in England. It's going on in other countries as well. That is the main battle that we face at the moment, is to prevent these laws from being put into place. We need to be putting our point across to people that we're not trying to incite hatred. And the way that we do that is just in the terminology that we use. Hopefully these laws won't actually be passed. They still have a public consultation in this. But the more that we talk about them, and the more that we talk about how to prevent people from talking about these subjects without having to prove that there's an intent to incite hatred goes against all our rights, all our freedom of speech that we fought for. What we need to be doing is pointing that out so that hopefully when they do have these discussions, when they do have these consultations, that will come up and it will prevent them from being able to do it. Because all this will do is benefit our opponents. As I say, this is a competition. We have to study the strategies of our opponents and we have to counter those strategies. And this is the most important battle that's going on at the moment. We've lost the political battle. We don't have any political parties in Parliament, but we do still have the ability to talk amongst ourselves, and all the while we can pass on this information. We will remain safe. We need to be able to pass on our inheritance to our children. We need to talk to them about their history. We need to make them aware that we didn't just live in Britain, we didn't just live in Europe, we also lived in the Near East. We actually went out and colonized the world from the Fertile Crescent. And we built all those civilizations. We were the original civilization builders. And what happened is we ended up interbreeding with the Aborigines, with the natives of the land who we were originally employing for use as labor. And we ended up making them citizens and we ended up interbreeding with them. And once we interbred with them, the offspring were unable to maintain the civilization. In some cases, they were able to just about keep it going, but in other cases, the ability to create new things and innovate was completely lost, because that is what happens when you stop being the original people that built the civilization. There's a very old quote that says that what went wrong in Greece, what went wrong in Athens, is because there were no more Athenians in Athens. Because they allowed too many different types of people to become citizens there. It was the same thing with the Roman Empire. Once the Roman Empire stopped being Roman, it fell apart. We can look at China and we can see that China was able to maintain the civilization, but it wasn't able to advance the civilization. It was able to maintain a modicum of civilization, but they weren't able to advance. When we were trading with them 100 years ago, 150 years ago, they were not really that far beyond some of these other countries that are in the third world. It's only because of our technology that we have given to these peoples that they are able to maintain a certain standard today. And without any white people left in the world, nobody will be able to maintain any standard. We'll just go back to the Stone Age. We'll just go back to living in the way that some of these tribes live in Africa. And this is what we need to be teaching to our children. This is the most important battle. If we can make people aware of what their inheritance is, make people aware of their history and their place in the world and their importance in the world, then they're not going to miscegenate. And they're going to understand that they should be purchasing things from white businesses. They should be employing white people. They should be voting for anybody that appears to be looking out for the interests of white people. We can't hold out hope for somebody that's going to explicitly do that, because if they were to explicitly do that, they would be called all these nasty names. As I pointed out yesterday, anybody that actually has a political party that explicitly advocates for white people is going to be accused of being racist, Nazi, white supremacist, or all the rest of it. And they're not going to be able to get anywhere. But somebody that points out that they want to do what they can for the working classes, and they want to stop immigration because that's of benefit to everybody that's in the country, they can get somewhere. I mean, we've seen that with Donald Trump. I mean, immigration doesn't benefit the people that are already in the country. The American blacks, they don't want the Mexicans coming in over the border. The mestizos and the blacks, they have a lot of problems with one another. So what benefits white people, in actual fact, benefits these other races. And that's another thing that we can talk about. We can explain how our policies would actually benefit the other races that are here. Obviously, we would like to encourage them to go back to their ancestral homelands, and Patriotic Alternative has a plan for that. where they would be given contributions in order to voluntarily leave. It's not like we want to be rounding people up and kicking them out of the country. We want them to go voluntarily. Now, if you look at the things that Patriotic Alternative are doing, they are all the sort of things that, a racially conscious grouping should be doing, I think. It's all about community building. It's all about communicating our history to our people, particularly with the homeschooling branch of it, and encouraging our people to be the very best people that they can be. We need to be a good example. We need to be acting like we deserve the benefits and the gifts that we have. We are a gifted people. Just about 99% of everything that we have in the world came from white people because we are gifted. And these other races, they know that. And when they see us behaving in a degenerate way, when they see us behaving in ways similar to the worst of their people, they just think, how could you do that when you have all the gifts that you have? You are so lucky having what you have, and yet you behave as if you're one of us. So we need, these are the sort of things that we need to be avoiding. We want to teach our people that they are the very best people in the world, and they need to show that they are the best people in the world by being the most moral people in the world. It's no good resorting to behaving in the same way as our opponents do. We might as well just be our opponents then. And a lot of people will say, well, we should take a leaf out of the Jews' book and behave like Jews. That will win. No, that won't win. That just means that everybody behaves like Jews. A lot of this is at the individual spiritual level. We need to be fighting this as individuals. We need to be fighting the temptation that we see around us to behave like bad people. As I was pointing out yesterday, the temptation for divorce, abortion, pornography, gambling, drinking, selfishness, gluttony, envy, all these things we need to avoid because we do have the ability to avoid them. And yesterday I was talking about how mercy is a valued trait. It is a positive trait. And one of the ways that mercy comes into this, we could see with the Proud Boys a couple of weeks back. There were videos doing the rounds of the Proud Boys at one of these Stop the Steal rallies, and the Antifa has started trying to attack them. And basically what we saw was the Proud Boys defend themselves, and when they had the Antifa on the ground, they didn't land the death punch or the death blow. Once they were on the ground, they stopped attacking them, because that's what you do as a white man. You don't gratuitously attack somebody. Once you've got them and they know that they are at your mercy, you give them mercy. And hopefully that will teach them a lesson. And this shows us how we are different from these other races. If you look at what happens in Africa, if there's something like that happening and somebody's on the ground, then everybody will join in and beat the hell out of the person that is on the ground, because they see helplessness as a weakness, and they don't like weakness. If they see weakness, they want to attack it. If we see weakness, we want to protect it. And I don't mean weakness of spirit here. I mean, if somebody is physically weak, if you look at these third world countries and they see people that are physically weak, they see them as targets, targets for theft or mugging or just whatever. That person is weaker than me, so I will take what I can from him. That is the mentality. The white man's mentality is, if you see somebody that is weaker than you, that needs help, then we help them. And that is a strength. When we do that to our own people, it becomes a strength. When we do that to all these other peoples, then it becomes a weakness. And when they see it in us, they see it as a weakness. They don't see it as, well, that's a good example, we should be doing that with our people. They will mock us for being like that. So we are very, very different to the other races, and we should be able to win with our strengths. We were able to win in this competition. At the turn of the century, we were leading the world. We had what was called the rule of white supremacy. And what that meant, it didn't mean the white man ruling over the other races. It meant there was the rule of law and order and charity and justice, and the world wasn't as corrupt as it is today. And the people that were writing about white supremacy in the last century and that were concerned about losing it, that's what they were concerned about losing. They were concerned that if we lost that position in the world, then the world would become corrupt. There would be no more law and order. Politicians would be able to be bought off. Democracy would fail. Elections would fail like we see them failing in the third world. And there would be poverty, and there would be people starving, and there would be theft and muggings and all the things that we see now happening in the multicultural centres. And a lot of incompetence. These are all the sort of things that they were worried about that we were going to see if we lost our position in the world. And we have lost our position in the world since then. And the only people that it's actually down to is us. Now, we can look at the politicians and we can say, well, they are traitors. But you don't know how you would react if you were under the pressure that they are under. We can all pretend that we are better than them and that we wouldn't accept the bribes and we wouldn't become corrupt. But when it comes down to it, they are the same genealogy as us. They are made of the same stuff that we are, and yet they fell for it. So we can't look at them and say, well, we are better than them. All we can hope to do is hope that if a situation like that occurred, we wouldn't become corrupt. And the way to do that is just to improve the way that you are, work on being the best person that you can be. And then when life gives you a chance to make a decision that could have an effect on a lot of people, you know that you will make the right decision. Another thing that we can be doing is to make it so that people understand that the way to rebel against things is not to fall for the pre-packaged rebellions that we've already been given. Most people can see that there's something wrong, and they understand that the authority has become corrupted. And we naturally want to follow authority, particularly women. They will particularly just go along with whatever the authority tells them. So we naturally want to follow authority, but we understand that the authority is corrupt. So when you are young, particularly when you are a teenager, you want to rebel. You want to rebel against this. And the prepackaged forms of rebellion are already there for us. Take drugs, miscegenate, behave immorally, go to raves, go to festivals, become a hedonist, just get out of your head and forget everything. And that's the rebellion. Go along with Black Lives Matter, go along with Antifa. These are all prepackaged forms of rebellion. Either just get out of your head and ignore it all, which again is still breaking the law, but it's still promoted. Drug taking is still promoted by the music scene. Or if you want to rebel politically, then they give you the prepackaged form of Antifa or Black Lives Matter or the left. But we understand that the true rebellion is the traditionalist rebellion, the traditional morals. One man, one woman, wanting to have a wife and settle down and have children and not be homosexual and not be a drug user and not be a gambler and not be a pornographer. That's the true rebellion today, because everything we see in the mainstream media encourages us to do the opposite. So the new generation, the Zoomers, their way to rebel is to be traditionalists. It's to look at our past, look at the way that their grandfathers behaved and emulate them. And I'm sure a lot of them think this way anyway, but we need to encourage them. When they do the right thing, we need to encourage them. We need to encourage them to be the best people that they can actually be, and to understand that they are, by doing that, they are emulating their ancestors, and that their ancestors will be proud of them. And all of this sort of thing, we need to be able to communicate to people. And if they change these laws, then that will prevent us from being able to get this information out. That, and I see that as being the most important and immediate battle that we have on our hands at the moment. Also, we need to do this community building side of things, which obviously Patriotic Alternative is doing, with people going on hikes and walks and picnics and foraging. And they've got a book club now. They've got a baking club. Obviously, we are limited at the moment with the coronavirus restrictions, but we can still do the community building online. And once the restrictions are lifted, then we can carry on with that community building in the outside world. And as we meet with people and as we make these connections, hopefully we'll be able to make business connections as well. And if you need somebody to do some work on your house, you'll be able to employ another nationalist to do that. If you need somebody to work for you at your business, then you'll have another nationalist that can do that. Or if you are looking for work, you can say, I'm a nationalist and I'm looking for work with other nationalists. And we can look out for our own people. And these are the small ways that we can start off with. And what I think we should be looking at is just having an advocacy group for ourselves. Because the way that our opponents have managed to get the government to look into changing the law is by having advocacy groups for themselves. Jews have got all sorts of different advocacy groups. Blacks have got all sorts of different advocacy groups. Muslims have. As white people, we don't have any. And we need to have white people that have our own group that advocates for us, that lobbies the government to not change our history, that sues the BBC every time they put somebody black into a historical position that was white, and that speaks up and points out these loopholes in these speech laws that prevent white people from being able to speak critically about any other group in society, while every other group in society does nothing but speak critically about white people. And if we can get one of these advocacy groups going, then they should be able to get funding from the government in the same way that these minority groups get funding from the communities minister. And we can say, well, we have a white community that also has needs just as much as these other communities have needs. And we need to have funding and we need to have encouragement in what we're doing. And we need to be consulted when there's going to be changes in law. We need to be consulted about these things. And it's only logical that we should be entitled to that. And I think the fact that we don't have that is down to all these insults and this hold that our opponents have on the mainstream media and on the government. But as things go along and as we get more and more support, I think we will get one of these advocacy groups one of these days, because more and more white people are waking up to what is going on and they are searching for the truth. This is why our opponents want to get these laws changed. So that when the white people are searching for the truth, they're not able to find any because the truth will have been made illegal. And if there's no pushback against this, if the Law Commission don't hear us pointing these things out and pointing out these loopholes, they're not going to be able to put those answers forward, are they? If they haven't heard them from us, they're not going to think of them themselves. They need to hear us speaking about that and advocating for that. These are the sort of things that we need to be doing, not fantasizing about what we would do if we had a political party. We have all these really important things that we need to be doing in our individual lives, in our individual communities. And as I say, all we have to do is get every white person in Britain understanding who they are, what their history is, and how harmful miscegenation is, and then we won't be a minority. We could not ever be a minority. The white race could never die out because white people would understand the value that they had in being white. Just telling somebody to think about how many white generations went before them to create them, and that they are the sum of all those generations that went before, and every single one of those ancestors married somebody who looked just like them. Every single one of them refused to fall to temptation and interbreed with another race. And because of that, you have all these ancestors that go back thousands of years. And that's the reason why you are white. And that is your inheritance that you can pass on to your children, and your ancestors can live again in your children. We need to be getting that across to people. Just what an invaluable treasure that is. It's of infinitesimal worth to have all those ancestors and to be the culmination of all of that and the very best version that there is of all of that. Don't forget, we have gradual adaptation. I don't believe in macroevolution, but we certainly have microevolution, and the people that are around today should be the very best example of our people that there is, and we have that ability to be the very best people. And this is the sort of thing that we need to be communicating and getting out to our people, because if we can get that out to our people, then we won't become a minority, and there will always be that flame there just waiting to burst forth again with the light of civilization and a flurry of innovation and creativity, like our ancestors did, that gave birth to all the other wonderful epochs in our history. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.